I'm Doug Fambrough. I'll just speak for a very few minutes. There have been some really great presentations, and I don't want to spoil it by going on too long. So as Skip mentioned, I'm with a venture capital firm, Oxford Bioscience Partners. So before I get into this, just a few moments on who we are. We're a VC firm. We like to think of ourselves as leaders. We would, wouldn't we? We invest all over the life sciences, therapeutics, medical devices, research tools, reagents, and also outside of healthcare, anywhere life sciences can have a major impact. We do a lot of early stage stuff, but we're diversified by stage, invest all over the world, based in Boston, have a bunch of money and a bunch of people. But I think the key reason why Skip asked me to present here is that my firm's really been very active in the neuro area. And it's been a humbling experience, I have to say. Our firm has done very well in platform technologies. We've done very well in anti-infectives, cardiac medical devices, done some good tools and reagents deals. I'd say we're probably net negative in the neuro space. It's been very hard to finance companies and take them through to a successful winning outcome in the area. So we'll probably continue to do it for the right opportunities, but I want to talk about why that may be the case. Other than maybe just we're not that smart. So first, why go into neuro in the first place? It's a fabulously huge area. These are all drugs with over $1 billion in annual sales worldwide that act through neurological mechanisms. So it's a very long list. And the list of drugs that are coming off patent in the coming years, this is just U.S. revenue, that's why the numbers are lower, is a very long list. So these are really important franchises for the pharmaceutical industry. Almost every company is in this area, and it's a big part of revenue. And these are franchises that companies want to protect. So it's a big target to aim at. There's a lot of potential partners and acquirers out there that are looking to maintain their positions in these markets even after their current drugs go off patent. That's probably the fundamental driver, although I think it's worth saying that I think there's some people at Oxford, and I think this is true throughout biotech and pharma, people who have a particular passion for certain therapeutic areas, and there's some of that going on at Oxford, particularly with the psychiatric space. At any rate, we've invested in quite a few companies in the area. The next slide lists a few of our investments, a few of the ones that are perhaps better known, that illustrate what is in general been our strategy, which is to focus on companies pursuing new therapeutics that are based on mechanisms of action for which there appears to be a very strong rational basis, whether it's medical, scientific, for believing that drugs that act by that mechanism of action are going to be effective. In the case of Hypnion, that was in the sleep and wakefulness area. I'll come back and talk more about them in a bit. Targacept, this is a company focused on nicotinic receptors. I think it's very well known. Schizophrenics self-medicate with cigarettes. It's probably something to the nicotine nicotinic receptor pathway in schizophrenia. In case of Memory Pharmaceuticals, this was a company founded on Nobel Prize-winning science on learning and memory. They've branched out since then, but that was what they're founded on. Brain Cells is based, a fairly new company based on a pretty striking correlation between lack of neurogenesis in the hippocampus and depression. Acadia has been working in schizophrenia. So we pursued these new mechanisms of action, but we've run into a lot of the issues that I think the previous speakers have articulated better than I ever could. Here's Gary Larson's take on the slide that Daryl showed. Very difficult to know as you're pursuing the drug discovery process how well your drugs are actually going to work in patients. That forces you to go pretty deep into the clinic with these programs. And as also been pointed out, the clinical endpoints tend to be pretty soft and subjective, and that really translates into needing large trials, and of course large means long and expensive. Also in a lot of these areas, particularly in psychiatry, there are drugs on the market, there are chronic daily treatments, and you have to be better than the standard of care, and you can't be any less safe. The FDA is not in a place where marginal clinical benefit is traded off against marginal risk. If you've got any marginal risk, it's not going to fly. So your companies have to drive these programs very deep, and that requires a lot of funding, which puts a lot of pressure on people like me, the venture capitalists who have to fund these companies. So at this point, I want to go back and mention Hypnion, because it's maybe the exception that proves the rule. It's our most successful deal. in the neuro space. It was acquired by Lilly a couple of years ago for over $300 million. They're in the sleep and wakefulness area, and you know, it's pretty easy to tell if the dog is asleep. And I mean that. I mean that pretty seriously. Sleep is a distinct neural process, and it. And it is distinct from sedation or just a general suppression of neurological activity. And Hypnion had tools out of Stanford University which allowed the researchers to really tell that the animals were in fact sleeping and not just sedated, and sleep in animals looks very much like sleep in humans. The company was able to design pharmaceuticals that worked effectively to induce a sleeping state, and in a relatively modest phase 1 clinical trial could show that it worked well in humans, and they were able to iron out the pharmacokinetics to get that appropriate for the disorder. That turned out to be a challenging issue for the company because while people want to sleep, they don't want to sleep for 12 hours. You have to wash it out after 6 or 8. But they were able to sort it out and create a package that gave Lilly the confidence that this was going to be a very successful program, even though it had only been taken through phase 1 clinical trials. In these other areas where there's poorer predictivity and the need for large later stage clinical trials, it hasn't been possible to get the larger pharmaceutical companies to be willing to step up and make an acquisition of our portfolio companies. I mean, acquisition is a business transaction where the acquiring party is agreeing to take on 100% of the risk of the program going forward. And that requires a lot of confidence on the part of the acquirer that it's going to work. And with the poor predictivity, I don't think it's been able to, we've been able to generate that confidence in the acquirer community. And so they have only been willing to enter into risk-sharing collaborations, which, while they do provide additional funding, which is very important because these are long and expensive trials, also tends to remove the motivation for them to subsequently acquire the company. In past years, and those years are getting increasingly distant, we'd be able to take these companies public and then trade out of the stock on the public markets. After all, we're in the stock buying and selling business. Every share we buy in these private financing rounds is a share we're going to have to sell at a later date. It is always easiest and often most lucrative to do that in an acquisition. We sell the whole big lump to the acquiring party. But with the public markets for biotechs being less and less vital and now downright lifeless, we are kind of finding ourselves in what you might call the Hotel California problem. Like, we can never leave these companies. they continue to spend money, and it's just not a good value proposition for us. So those have been our issues. Just to sum up, we've been investing in these mechanisms of action, but it's not always clear that you know, we get it right. These are very complicated diseases. We got to take them late. We've had some failures and clinical failures in our companies that, you know, again, really late in the process. When it worked out, like with Hypnion, it can in fact be quite rewarding. And when I look at CNS versus other disease areas, for example, the infectious disease area, I mean, no therapeutic area is easy to develop drugs in. They're all very hard, but probably on average, CNS has turned out to be a harder area than others, whereas infectious disease might be a little bit easier. So that's all I had.